This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, you're listening to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashrin Johan. A lot has been said about the largest opposition bloc, Pakatan Harapan, over the past year or so, particularly of its leader, Anwar Ibrahim. Langkah Sheraton happened because members of Pakatan Harapan decided to leave. And since Langkah Sheraton, Harapan hasn't appeared to be an inspiring, united force. Anwar Ibrahim himself hasn't been successful in cobbling together the numbers, despite repeatedly indicating that he can or has. So the question is, does Pakatan Harapan need a new leader? Joining me on the show today to help me unpack that is political observer Arif Adiputra, who's also a research officer from the Institute of Development Studies. Welcome to the show, Arif. How are you doing?
Very good. Thank you for having me here today.
Thank you for coming on the show. Now, before we get to if Harapan needs a new leadership and why that may or may not be, let's talk about the current leader of Harapan, Anwar Ibrahim. We know that Anwar's journey as the leader of the largest opposition bloc began way back in 1998. I mean, from getting sacked from UMNO to starting the Reformasi movement, partnering with DAP, and even for the longest time past, you know, they formed Pakatan Rakyat, and then later that has evolved now into Pakatan Harapan. How has he performed over the years as leader of the opposition?
Well, I can say that the Reformasi era was definitely a watershed moment in Anwar Ibrahim's career. It can be widely accepted as a paradigm shift for opposition politics, as it placed the rhetoric of respect for the rule of law, political reform, social justice, centre-left politics and what have you at the forefront of Malaysia's mainstream political environment. And despite Anwar's vilification in the eyes of Mahathir and his administration at the time, this sentiment spread like wildfire throughout the 2000s and the 2010s, which led to subsequent eras of Anwar's political career, which we can describe as an expansion of this Reformasi spirit. It definitely did not erode over time. In fact, it just kept on growing and growing and ballooning, going into other political parties to take on this initiative as well for reform. And when Anwar was let loose, finally, from incarceration to campaign, he made full use of his rhetorical and oratory ability to its fullest extent, where he was able to command the opposition landscape by virtue of being seen in the eyes of reformists alongside urban progressives as somewhat of a martyr figure, and being also a compromisable choice out of the opposition coalition's leaders to become a prime minister, given that he also comes from a Malay Muslim disposition, and having that pedigree of bringing the reform agenda into light. So he combines the idea of prestige at the same time, somewhat that legitimacy question that we have when it comes to picking our prime ministers. It always has to be a certain stock. So he combined the best of those, and being able to do that combined with his already fascinating oratory abilities, that really puts him at the forefront. And just by virtue of that, he was able to just carve out his own niche in the political scene. And we have to bear in mind, he was able to do this and retain some level of influence as an opposing force despite the incarcerations. And so I think he was quite instrumental in breaking the ceiling. And that is a success that we can attribute to him over the years, that Reformasi was somewhat of a political tremor at the time, and Anwar Ibrahim was able to leverage this rallying cry to maintain his political influence and continued relevance in the arena. I guess this also helped cultivate his status as an iconic and household name, which afforded him that whole mileage to sustain it. It would be very hard to have seen Pakatan Rakyat or Pakatan Harapan race to the Dewan collectively without Anwar being a main protagonist in this respect. But I guess that relevance remains to be tested in the coming months leading up to the next general election.
Recently, though, there have been talks about Harapan needing a new leader. In fact, many Harapan supporters, particularly on social media, like Twitter, for example, or even Clubhouse, have called for Anwar to step down as the leader. Why do you think this is?
I think we have to go by the assumption that the political climate has evolved, where a universal outlook for a regular citizen in Malaysia is that there needs to be a wave of fresh leadership. This has been a very, very important rhetoric and very important narrative that has been brewing for the past election cycle, I believe. So now you see Anwar Ibrahim being 76 years old and having been a veteran in the field for quite some time. This may be a positive, seeing that he has experience, but it also can be a double-edged sword, as we can observe diminishing returns for him, especially from younger demographics. You know, Mahathir's Malaysian Vision 2020 is a much more recognizable objective than Anwar's Reformasi, given that many youths never really experienced that kind of awakened fervour and zeal that was captivating at the time, outside of those that have been quite active in politics themselves. So the relatability is very hard to connect for younger audiences, other than those who kind of grew up in an environment that has already fostered that scepticism for him. So when it comes to relatability, in my estimation, for Anwar, to be seen as he has to be seen as cultivating newer and younger and dynamic leaders to be placed into the forefront. For the reform agenda has become quite larger than just Anwar himself. And with, you know, newer global developments means new avenues for reform, which although we can say Anwar's reforms are still quite foundational and systematic in nature, I think it will require a lot of expansion and fine-tuning for a more modern context. And if Anwar is not able to leverage on these new changes, I think it seems that his mode of reformasi is a bit outdated for a lot of people who have younger sensibilities who wants a fresh take on reformasi as well, because we don't want reformasi just to be led by a certain group. We want it to be more amalgamated with not just the old sensibilities, but the newer sensibilities right now. So it's imperative for Anwar to be on top of these things, to at least be dynamic in the engagement. It's the bane of the aging politician, really, that the longer you are in the game, the repetitious it can be to see the same faces, much like we see the dissatisfaction for having the same people in positions of power. And this logic kind of cuts both ways, from government to opposition, and it would be safe to assume that party tensions can arise from this when you have younger stars with potential not really being recognised.
Arif, I want to pick up on something you mentioned in your answer, right? You mentioned this phrase, diminishing returns for Anwar. What do you mean by that?
I think when I mentioned diminishing returns is that the more Anwar stays in the political arena, he propagates this image of reform. Now, when we talk about reform, what do we mean by reform? It's a very hard thing to really encapsulate. It's intangible. So for youths who are just getting into politics, how can you actually discuss something that is much larger than what is tangible or very visible? This is very different from the clientelistic approach that the Barisan National Coalition has cultivated over the years, which is something of you give a certain benefit or certain favour. Now, that's something you can see. But Anwar, it's something that has been going on for since 98. And we don't, except for especially people like me, is that we never really grew up in that kind of era where the energy really was at an all-time high for Anwar to go against injustices that he saw in the system. It was only later, when people started to become more awakened politically, that they can see that they can relate to Anwar. But for many other people, the awakening isn't really there. So when you talk about reform, it's not so relatable. It's very hard to articulate in a way when it comes to young voters. Mm. So unless Anwar becomes a bit more relatable in this regard, it would seem that he would be losing out as the years go by.
Right. Does Anwar have too much baggage, you think? It may not necessarily be his fault, but it seems like some people, particularly those outside of the core Harapan group, for example, in the opposition, for example, Mahathir's camp, perhaps even Shafi Abdal's camp, while they may be willing to compromise, it seems like they may not necessarily like him. And you know, there's always this hesitance to throw their support behind him. Now, interestingly, of course, Anwar, Mahathir, and Shafi are all ex-UMNO folk. I'm wondering, does all of this, you know, their shared history, their past differences, and all of this, does Anwar carry too much baggage around with him?
I think when it comes to the main narrative that, let's say, Mahathir or I don't know, maybe if Shafi chooses to oppose him in a way, the narrative is that because they have been working together for quite some time, they would know the flaws and the issues that they can use against each other to leverage support against Anwar Ibrahim. So we can unpack Anwar in terms of why the narratives that they can use is that his political career, you know, you can unveil a lot of hesitation on people to consider him as a candidate for the premiership. He still carries that burden of being labelled as too liberal and pro-Western in his foreign engagements, which would be quite contradiction to Malaysia's neutral foreign policy of not hedging towards a single global power.
Do you think, Arif, that he's too liberal?
I don't think he's too liberal. It's that the rhetoric, the narrative has been pushed to that he is liberal. I think more for a fact, he's more center-left in that regard, because he was at one point one of the chief architects and the chief engineers of the Islamization processes in the 1980s and 1990s, given the aftermath of the Iranian Revolution. But he was also quite pro-open market, and this went against Mahathir's protectionist policies at the time, especially during the financial crisis. They had, it was quite famous how they both bickered on how to tackle the issue. And Anwar, I guess, was more leaning towards a Western disposition with the Bretton Woods institutions like the IMF or the World Bank.
Right. Now, you know, one of the arguments we've constantly heard is this, you know, that Anwar, I think that the emotional side of Harappan supporters, of some Harappan supporters, right, or non-supporters as well, it's this idea that, you know, Anwar, you know, he didn't secure the numbers in the past, you know, three occasions or more than that, you know, the numerous occasions over the past couple of years, 1 year plus since Lanka Sheraton. Hence, he should step down. But how valid do you think is this argument that because Anwar says he has the numbers and then even he didn't actually cobble them together, that he that because of that, he should step down? Because when we look at elections track record, as you rightfully pointed out, Anwar has been the team captain when opposition made tremendous grounds in 2008, in 2013, and then, of course, in 2018, while Mahathir did sort of become the pseudo-captain, you know, when Anwar was behind bars, it was still Anwar's team, essentially, right? So how valid is this particular argument?
Well, like I mentioned before, Anwar's strength really lies in his ability to captivate on a rhetorical level, an oratory level. So we don't really see much of that kind of Anwar, the Anwar that really brought himself to the forefront more recently. He seems to just be resigning a position of just taking a back seat in the entire thing. We only saw him becoming a bit more active when we saw the whole issue with the political drama that was happening over the past few weeks. So I think based on these series of events is that Anwar was laying dormant for quite some time. And then when he saw that there was an opportunity for him, he feels like it's the best time to actually lay down the cards and say that, okay, we have the majority, we have the numbers. So it's almost like a challenge to show that, okay, let's just prove it here and now. If we do have it, you know, the ship will sail continuously with us as the government. But you know, that didn't work out. But we can see that recently, right after when Ismail Sabri was appointed prime minister, Anwar Ibrahim on his Instagram was quite active. He was quite vocal about trying to become more active in a way, trying to retake the narrative and trying to take control, saying that, okay, we shall work hard throughout these next 17 months to show that we are the premier choice when it comes to electing a more progressive party over time. But that really hinges on whether or not PKR is able to break away from that whole mold, and not just PKR, but Pakatan Harapan as a whole, to break away from that mold, being seen as a party that caters mostly to an urban demographic, which seems to be a bit out of touch with rural endeavors owing to factors of distrust, caution, and lack of relatability. So Anwar would have to step up its efforts more to be concentrated on the grassroots front, since at this time, the urban seats at this current juncture is quite a given and quite a comfortable position that they're in right now. So Anwar, I think being settled into a single mode for too long has put himself into a comfort zone. He has to break out from that and experiment in new ways and seats that they might not have even thought about before, and just experiment and try to build a wider network in the next general election. Maybe that is the approach that they'll be taking, to at least lay a mark, lay a foundation, lay a footprint, by making a huge vocal uproar over the numbers. So at least show that there's some kind of movement going on.
Arif, do you think that Pakatan Harapan needs a new captain?
I think definitely. Like I said, if Anwar was there for too long, the leadership would, the other members in the party would be like, why is this person always going to be there all the time? And we have seen a lot of complaints from PKR members, you know, cases of cronyism or nepotism with certain people being favored, or even like going through the same underhanded tactics that they would accuse their government counterparts of doing. The Kajang move is definitely one of those examples. And recently, with the alleged coup d'etat, quote unquote, for the, I believe it's the PKR chief secretary for Negeri Sembilan. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of disunity there. And the fact that Anwar is not really stepping up for these kinds of internal fighting shows that maybe he has really lost his touch within the party, may not be outside the party, but within the party. It's a very conflicted narrative right there. And we don't really see many PKR potential successes of candidates. It's easy to point out some of those in DAP. You have your Yeo Byin-hyun, you have your Kelvin Yee, you have the Lasimbangs in Sabah. So they're more visible. But in PKR, it's much harder to find worthy successes or worthy candidates. We all believe that Azmin Ali was supposed to take on that role, but he chose another path. Same with Rafizi Ramli and his daughter Nurul Izzah trying to take a bit more of a back seat in this current juncture.
On the show with me today is Arif Adiputra. He's a research officer from the Institute of Development Studies, as well as a political observer. After the break, I'll be asking him, if not Anwar, then who? We'll be back with more on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is Arif Adiputra. He's a research officer from the Institute of Development Studies, and we're discussing if Pakatan Harapan needs new leadership. So, Arif, it's easy to say replace Anwar, but replace with who? This is a question that nobody really seems to be able to answer. And you know, given our current political realities, you know, where most people believe that the prime minister candidate must be a Malay, what options does the Pakatan Harapan in its current form have? Because DAP is a strong party, but they have no strong Malay candidates yet. Amana is still too small of a party. So essentially, when we look at the core Harapan block, it does go back to PKR. Of course, outside the main block, there are other options like Shafi Abdal and whatnot. But again, like you said, we are basically grasping at straws when we want to, name names. So is this a structural problem? And what about Nurul Izzah? Realistically, do you think that she can lead Pakatan Harapan moving forward?
Well, I think when it comes to the fact that Anwar chooses to sail his own ship on his own terms, shows that maybe that the Pakatan Harapan either wants to still continue with this kind of arrangement with Anwar, or they would want to see that, okay, that since that Bersatu has left, which was used back then in the GE14 to secure the Malay votes, they don't have that avenue anymore. Yet, we can see sort of a more progressive wave when it comes to Sabah, with when everyone was naming their own prime minister, the names being thrown around. Shafi Abdal Warisan Sabah was seen as a potential candidate. And I've estimated that Shafi Abdal's recent media appearances being one of articulating himself as a very multiracial and multicultural progressive would strike a chord with those that have held on to the reform agenda. And that can potentially transfer Anwar's popularity over to him. Furthermore, this was compounded with the emergence of a very, very progressive attitude that a Sabahan and Sarawakian should become a prime minister, or at the very least, a deputy prime minister for the sake of representation. Now, Shafi can be poised to actually take on that role within Pakatan Harapan, given that he does want to make inroads in a peninsula, but that's still an uphill battle, given that he still has to fight the battlefield over on his home ground, Sabah. So that's still a far-fetched idea, but you know, one that people don't really want to discount yet, just because of the sake of fair representation and equal partnership under the idea of federalism and for Sabah to finally get its dues alongside Sarawak.
And on that note, right, when we look at Parti Keadilan Rakyat in PKR in particular, many of the frogs that caused the downfall of Harapan in 2020 were from PKR, Azmin's gang in particular. And like you mentioned, right, there isn't, you know, when we look at DAP right now, it's very easy to just name names. Even Aduns have really, you know, starting to make a big name for themselves. We have like the likes of Lim Yi Wei and Michelle and, you know, we have Howard Lee. And so we can see that sort of clear line of succession there. Whereas things are a little bit murky in PKR, it seems like they are still trying to figure things out, that the succession plan isn't clear. After Rafizi had a slight fallout with PKR, that ship also seems to have sailed. And then Nurul Izzah, you know, she has a great, tremendous amount of respect from a lot of the electorate, but she seems to have distanced herself from the hardcore politics, you know, shall we say. So how does Pakatan Harapan, or particularly in this sense, PKR, fix this problem? Is it a recruitment problem? Is it a structural problem? Or is it a matter of, you know, if we change the head, things perhaps could start moving in the right direction?
I think the inconsistency lies with the fact that PKR kind of structures itself very in a hierarchical fashion, which kind of goes against the idea of reform, the reform agenda, where you want equal representation and social justice to make sure that everyone gets their fair share and be able to say what they want to say. So, but this is not a feature that's exclusive to just PKR. A lot of other political parties, barring a paltry handful, you know, there really is a structure of hierarchical placation. You have to toe the line. Loyalty is the premium currency in every party, and any deviation or disagreement can spark conflict. So it's not just a one-man coalition or one-man party calling the shots, but I feel it's a very systemic and cultural issue that politics has been embedded with here in Malaysia. So the AP, I think they figured that out in a way by presenting their younger and more fresh leaders to the forefront. But for PKR, I think they're still struggling and trying to reconcile that hierarchical structure that they have, given that you know, there is those accusations of nepotism and favoritism among a certain few. So I guess PKR is in a very awkward situation in that regard.
Arif, how different are realities on the ground compared to what we see on social media, particularly when we talk about platforms like Twitter and Clubhouse? You know, on that note, right, but scratch that, perhaps we can even forget realities on the ground, because even on Twitter, right, whenever someone suggests that Harapan needs new leadership, there are many others who, you know, would quote tweet and say, you know, I won't even vote for Harapan in the first place if Anwar wasn't the prime minister candidate. So I'm wondering, how different is it, the realities within the bubble of those who are extremely politically engaged and, you know, talking about ideologies and philosophy and all these kinds of things versus the general voter? Is personality politics still a very important factor in our political landscape today?
I do believe that personality politics is still a mainstay, even till now, because when it comes to, let's say, the more educated urbanites, they can see, you know, they have priorities that are more intangible. So it's, you know, fairer democracy and social justice. However, when it comes to those on the reality on the ground, is that priorities are completely different. And when it comes to the grassroots, you know, the system of patronage politics is still very pervasive there. And this was a craft that UMNO and Barisan Nasional has expertly mastered, barring any assumptions that the resources to make use of the strategy is running dry. But, you know, conservative grassroots will still hold the apprehension for Anwar, given his image of liberal proclivities. Whether or not that is true or false, that really depends on how one is interprets Anwar's engagements and the environment that they grew up in. And this is really the challenge to overcome when it comes to moving Pakatan Harapan moving into the grassroots, is that they will take some effort and will take some time to unhinge these perceptions and understand that urban successes will not really translate well as strategies into the grassroots sites, due to just the large gap in priorities. So let's say for us people in the city, we already have secured, you know, a more comfortable lifestyle. We, you know, can put food on the plate. But for other people on the grassroots, these things are a daily concern. So unless you're able to attract that, you're able to tap into that kind of sensibility, it would be hard to penetrate. Because the whole clientelistic system, the patronage politics system, is that you attach an individual that's able to give out largesse and other kinds of privileges, you know, in the terms of monetary privileges to your constituents. So that attaches a relationship between the constituents and the individual that's giving out those, you know, we could say cash handouts, and so on and so forth. And policy is not really the forefront of that. It's whether or not this YB can provide ourselves a streetlight or, you know, enough money to get us through the month. That really is the priority there. And this has been going on, and it was used to quite a great extent in terms of mobilizing voters to vote in the ballot boxes. So it's kind of a system that we're stuck with. Voter turnout in Malaysia is relatively quite healthy, and it's because the whole clientelistic system was able to mobilize them in the first place. So in that regard, it really is a systemic issue that they would have to, that Pakatan Harapan would have to tackle when it comes to going to approaching those on the ground. So they would need people who are on the ground to lead those seats and find newer leaders that are more in tune with things there, and just decentralize the process and not make it so hierarchical, make it more flat so everyone is able to have their say, and that a certain constituent or candidate doesn't really have to wait for approval from his superior.
Now, you mentioned new leaders. Is that the key that Pakatan Harapan, particularly perhaps, you know, PKR and even the, like, you know, Amanah and all of these, they really need to develop new leaders? Because if Anwar Ibrahim himself, 77-year-old Anwar, has this image that, you know, he's this liberal person, when clearly, you know, a lot of us know that that's not the case at all. Factually speaking, like you brought up, he was one of the key components to Malaysia's Islamization back in the day, right? So with that in mind, do you see anyone in the current, when we look at the big names or the middle mid table players, shall we call it? Do you see anyone that people in the rural Malay heartland would look at and say, oh, he's not that liberal? Or are these current crop of leaders, do you think, most likely wouldn't be able to penetrate the rural Malay heartland, and we really need new grassroots leaders from the heartland itself?
I think one party that's kind of making inroads in terms of cultivating grassroots leaders is really MUDA. Syed Saddiq, I think his own grassroots initiatives has been quite successful when it comes to making sure that every household has a computer device. And decentralizing that process, decentralizing the party to make sure that each individual in that party has a say, really, it's not just about cultivating the leaders. Cultivating the leaders means that you're giving them some sort of free rein to exercise what kind of strategies might work. And this kind of experimentation is very much needed, because the political structure that we have now, the political arena, is stuck in a deadlock. So I think from here, the approach is that you need an approach that actually encourages younger leaders to speak up more. Party has to restructure. PKR, you know, being hierarchical, is kind of falling into the same situation that UMNO is that it's a very rigid and monolithic structure that is hard to be flexible in, it's hard to maneuver, and it'll become too bloated for its own good. So it's not just cultivating leaders, but cultivating strategies and cultivating how they approach the election seasons is what really, really counts. Because at the end of the day, it's trying to break away from this whole hierarchical structure that culturally Malaysia has been stuck with for the past, you know, since even before the independence days.
Apart from the hierarchical structure, do you think there needs to be better coordination and cooperation within amongst the various component parties that form Pakatan Harapan and the larger opposition bloc? Because many have argued that Harapan hasn't been an inspiring, united front nor force over the past year and a half. And one of the things that people always point to is this idea that they cannot even form a shadow cabinet as a coalition. The reason that many of its leaders have given is that that forming a shadow cabinet will only lead to arguments between component parties of the coalition. As you know, if PKR, for example, says, you know, this person from PKR should be education minister, then someone from DAP or Amana or some of the smaller parties in opposition bloc would be like, no, this person should be the education minister instead, and there may be bad blood might form because of that. But my argument is of course there will be arguments and things will get heated up and there might be some bad blood. But my question is, if they can't even sit down, argue, shake hands, and then come up with a shadow cabinet together, then how are they supposed to run a country when they actually get in power? And I'm wondering if this also goes back to a problem with leadership, not necessarily Anwar specifically, but the leadership of Harapan as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, the strength of good policy or good choices really comes from the strength of the arguments. Of course, when you're working with all kinds of people that comes from different spaces and different outlooks, of course, there's going to be disagreements here and there. But to not accept that as being part of the process shows there's an immature outlook towards politics and immature approaches to engaging with one another. So in a way, it's kind of a reflection that even though they're willing to work together on the public front, it might seem as if Pakatan Harapan really is just a marriage of convenience. It definitely was when it comes to Pakatan Rakyat, given how volatile that relationship was with PAS being part of the fold. So it means that when it comes to communication, they've not developed a proper system of communication with one another. This could be either through competing ambitions or, their own interests are at stake when it comes to having to comply or be a bit more accepting of the suggestions from the other party. But it's as a coalition, the disagreements is necessary and it's vital when it comes to discussion. The problem is taking it as a personal affront to individuals or to the party itself, when in fact, that the disagreements might come from a place of concern that, okay, you have to iron out why this person is a suitable candidate. And since they are made up of a group, of a collective, they should be able to decide collectively, not just one person calling the shots. And if one person not getting his way, they'll just walk out and then the whole system collapses and falls apart. So that really is an issue of mature politics not really being found in Pakatan Harapan. And infighting and instability is never going to be an attractive image or quality that a voter would want to see, especially if they hold a lot of faith for the coalition. Even though we talk about the hierarchical structure, is that at least in the Perikatan Nasional with UMNO and Barisan Nasional, even before, that structure kept people in line. But it did not make people prepared when it comes to taking on positions of power. So there really needs to be a balance here with trying to at least be consolidated and still be open to discussions and ideas.
All right. As we wrap this conversation up, Arif, final thoughts from you. Does Pakatan Harapan need new leadership?
Most definitely. And the leadership has to come from people who are definitely for the reform agenda, not just because it's for Anwar Ibrahim or DAP leaders or whatever. It has to come from individuals who went into politics because they were captured and were passionate about the whole idea of reform. That way, it's harder to fall prey to the political monster that is the arena that we have in Malaysian politics.
On that note, thank you so much for speaking with me today, Arif.
Thank you for having me. Have a nice day.
That was Political Observer Arif Adiputra. If you missed any part of our conversation, you can check out the podcast titled Does Harapan Need New Leadership on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Dashran Johan, and this has been Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.